I started trading tapes a few years later. So when I was 12 years old, I started trading tapes, and my friends, I was asking them to send me things, and, you know, I would occasionally buy tapes, $10, $15 a pop. I did the HTML for John McAdam in exchange for tapes, and John had a very extensive collection. So I got a lot of stuff from him.
Again, everyone, welcome to Stick to Wrestling. My name is John McAdam. This is Stick to Wrestling, a wrestling podcast primarily talking about classic pro wrestling from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Today, we are doing a mailbag episode on WrestleMania, celebrating the 40th WrestleMania that's coming up this weekend. Before I get rolling on that, if you want to contribute, ask a question. We frequently have these shows. Join our Facebook group. It's free to join. It's fun. I haven't said this in a while. I know people don't like to get dragged into Facebook. I know I'm it's not my thing either. And my advice to you, do what I do. Lie to your best friends, lie to your family, and tell them that you're not on Facebook, that you don't have anything to do with it, and just sneak away and do the wrestling thing. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, search John McAdam and follow the guy who has the Stick to Wrestling logo as his avatar. Stick to Wrestling, give us 60 minutes, and perhaps indeed we'll give you a Wicked Good and Raw Bone podcast. Our frequent guest is with us once again, Steve Generelli. Steve, how are you?
I'm good, John. I hope you're well, and it's great to be back. And it is WrestleMania weekend when this show premieres, so everybody's excited about that, and we're going to look back today on that. Our Facebook group has been very, very active. One of the posters, James Stewart, had a very interesting question. He talked about Wahoo McDaniel and Paul Jones getting the majority of NWA title matches in the mid-70s, and he asked, would either one have been a legitimately good NWA champion?
James Stewart, it's a wonderful life, and I think Paul Jones would have been a good NWA champion. And joining us for the first time in a long time, he's really good every time he comes on, and we finally have him back, Brendan Rice. Brendan from Las Vegas, good to see you.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing, man? Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you being here. You always deliver a fantastic show. And with that, Brandon, would you be willing to take the first question from our mailbag?
Yeah, let's go ahead. So the first question I'm going to go ahead and choose is from my guy, Mr. Ward, Mr. Jamie Ward. He asks, do you think we're going to see an internationally hosted WrestleMania soon?
Steve, what do you think?
Well, I know a couple of people in the group said we've already seen it with Canada, but, you know, with AEW having that huge show over in Wembley, yes, I think it's only inevitable. You've seen the NFL have huge attendances in Mexico City and different places. Yes, you will see WrestleMania from another location at some point.
You know, I'm at my most dangerous when I think about things. My initial reaction was, of course, they're going to have an international WrestleMania. But then you get into the time difference, right? And that's mm-hmm. a problem. I mean, when the NFL plays, you know, the game starts at 9 o'clock Eastern, which means it starts at 6 o'clock on the West Coast. But I'm like, okay, you know, you can work that out so that it starts a little bit, you know, maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon and 10 o'clock on the West Coast. And it's on Peacock. Like, okay, if you don't want to get up early and watch it, just, you know, get up, watch it when you want to, and just start at the beginning on Peacock and, you know, stay away from spoilers. But sporting events, and I do consider wrestling a sporting event, are different. It's weird watching a sporting event on tape delay or on videotape. I remember one year I had to go to a wedding for Tennessee, Alabama. You know, during the Tennessee-Alabama game, and I recorded it, and it was the mid-90s, so, you know, no spoilers, nothing popping up on the phone, and it just wasn't the same. So I don't know, but to answer the question, I think, to be honest, maybe we'll see London, maybe we'll see Mexico. I don't think we're going to be seeing, like, the Middle East, Australia, or anything like that, Japan. I think it's just too much of a hurdle. Brendan, what do you think?
I think for some of the reasons you mentioned that I think we eventually will. You take a look at, you know, AEW obviously doing Wembley Stadium, and from what we know, that was a success. And then just the fact alone that we do get, have been getting these international events in the Middle East and then Australia. And we know that obviously the fandom is there internationally for them to do it. I think the fact that the NFL does it successfully every year is another plus for them to do it. As far as the time thing goes, we always joke about it around here because, like I said, like I've told everybody before, my son's a huge fan, so that's kind of what has me going. And you know, he'll be really hype about, you know, the crown jewels and all these different events that the WWE puts on Peacock from overseas. And the start times are always so random. Sometimes they're at 9 a.m. here in Vegas, sometimes 6 a.m. And it's always funny. But I think the power alone that WrestleMania holds, I don't think the time difference for us here in America would make that much of a difference in terms of whether we want to watch it or not. It's WrestleMania. The most casual of fans know what WrestleMania is and want to watch it. So whether it comes on at 6 a.m. or 6 p.m., I don't think viewership is going to take that much of a hit because it's not coming on at a standard time. So I definitely think eventually they're going to put the pieces together and do something like that overseas. I don't think the time difference is going to be too big of an issue, again, because it's WrestleMania specifically.
Yeah, I mean, there are positives and negatives, but I mean, WrestleMania in London would be huge. It would be way bigger than, you know, Orlando or New Orleans or something like that. Not knocking those cities, but, you know, it would be huge if they had that in London.
And knowing, I mean, you know, these companies are so competitive with each other, just knowing that AEW now technically has the largest attendance for a live event or a live wrestling show, I'm sure that gives them added incentive to, you know, find a bigger building or go back to Wembley and beat them at their own game. And you know, it's up to WWE. I mean, when Vince was running it, he may have had that feeling of, well, this is the biggest American show. It's not going to leave the States. But now that these other folks are running the company, I mean, they just are more interested in the greenbacks and how much money they can take in. So, but John, you pick a question.
All right, I will pick a question from Romeo November. And Steve, being Mr. November is a big deal now because Reggie Jackson was Mr. October, but now the World Series is in November. So this is a big deal. He asked, and I have a lot to say about this, if WrestleMania 1 had failed, what do you think happens to the World Wrestling Federation? Brandon, what do you think?
I mean, it's pretty well documented, or at least been verbalized over the years, that they put kind of all their eggs in the basket for WrestleMania. And if it wasn't a success, you know, the promotion just crumbles, and, you know, it's in shambles. I personally look at it from a different perspective. Obviously, I don't know the financials of, you know, what Mr. T had to be paid, what, you know, Muhammad Ali had to be paid. I look at it as, I feel like at Madison Square Garden alone, with Hogan on top, I feel like they were packing the house pretty consistently anyway for Madison Square Garden. So I think as far as, you know, ticket sales goes, I don't think it was good. There was a possibility in 1985 with Mr. T on a card with Hulk Hogan at the top that, you know, they weren't going to pack Madison Square Garden and have people in a frenzy. But I guess I think that if it didn't come off as well as it did, I think that we obviously, it kind of thwarts the whole expansion in its tracks, and probably negates a lot of, you know, the MTV stuff and, you know, the rock and wrestling thing that they had, you know, used to help build up this thing in the beginning. I don't think that the promotion goes to shit, excuse my language, after WrestleMania. I think maybe it takes some time to recover. But Vince McMahon doesn't give me the type of vibe, at least back in those days. I don't speak for who he is now. He doesn't give me the vibe of somebody that would have quit. I feel like Vince would have found a way to bounce back from that and maybe try to, you know, run another super card, maybe later in the year, maybe the following year. Because if you look at it historically over, you know, the last 30, 40 years, the WWE has had some down years, 92, 93, 94, some years where their business just as a whole has been complete shit, and they've been able to come up out of that. So So I think maybe we see the expansion maybe take a little longer and they kind of have to go back to the drawing board to say, hey, what can we do to get over this hump and really kind of take over things? But I feel like at least obviously in the Northeast at that time, you know, in 85, I think the WWF had a stronghold on the territory. So maybe the expansion is delayed a little bit, but I don't think the WWF is completely ruined and finished if WrestleMania 1 isn't a booming success.
Steve, before I get to you with that question, I mean, I remember in like 91, 92, thinking that the WWF was an 80s fad, like acid wash jeans. It was gone. And I give them credit. They made a comeback, and here we are over 30 years later, and they're still going really strong. They're at their strongest since the Attitude Era. Steve, what do you think?
Well, I mean, and we've talked about it before. It just seems like there was no way that this thing could have failed. But I guess if we want to pretend like, you know, it failed for some unknown reason, I think something you and I have talked about, John, that I think that Vince had enough money in the coffers to continue with what he was trying to do. And I mean, from what we've talked about in the national expansion, you know, they were going to these new markets and they were doing fairly well. And as time would move on and Hogan was more well known, debuting in cities like Cincinnati and San Diego. And then as all this attention comes on him and, you know, they're going back to these cities, the attendance is only rising and people are getting more excited. So even if WrestleMania was a failure, I think all the penetration they had on the TV nationwide and all the buildings nationwide, I think their success would have eventually happened.
Well, backtracking a little bit, I mean, for whatever reason, closed circuit, which came and went pretty quickly, it was a walk-up business. People did not buy tickets in advance for it. And the WWF was canceling buildings the week before WrestleMania because of the poor advance, not knowing that it was, you know, people were going to buy tickets the day of the event. For whatever reason, it was different than the WWF having a live show and people buying tickets in advance. I have a lot to say about this. When I first started getting The Observer late 1986, and then I started making connections with people who knew things, who really knew the wrestling business and had all this information that I wanted, a common theme was that if WrestleMania had failed, the WWF would have gone out of business. And this was like the one thing that was being consistently conveyed to me that I was like, there's no way. There's no way they're going out of business. And I'm like, okay, maybe the Boston Garden was an outlier because it was either full or really close to full every month. And I'm doing the math. I'm like, okay, 15,000 people times $12 a ticket, that's a really good night. Then as time goes on, so I was kind of like, you know what? I don't think they would have gone out of business, but I'm almost like, okay, maybe Vince would have needed to take a partner. But there's no way this is just going to close. Someone would buy it, worst case scenario. Then as time goes on, we're getting more information, and I'm learning that not only was Boston doing well every single month, so were the old WWF strongholds, Madison Square Garden, $250,000 house every time they went out there. WWF was still doing really well at the Meadowlands and the Nassau Coliseum, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Philadelphia, all, you know, long-term WWF strongholds were doing outstanding business. You know, like I said, I had no way of knowing that in 1986, 1987, but now I know it. And now I also learned that the WWF was doing really strong in their new cities, Oakland, St. Louis, Toronto, San Diego, Los Angeles, Detroit, Chicago. So it's like, how could it possibly close? And then finally, recently, someone, Dave Meltzer, talked to someone who worked for the company and had access to the books. And he was saying, there's no way. It would have been a hit. It wouldn't have been good news if WrestleMania 1 had not done well, but it would have been a bump in the road. The WWF would have been just fine. Now, the other question. Okay, if WrestleMania 1 fails, is there a WrestleMania 2? If there's no WrestleMania 2, is there a WrestleMania 3? And to me, the answer is yes on both counts. I think what might have happened, Vince had this ace up his sleeve. It was called Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. And I don't care what they did, that was going to be successful, and they booked that really well. So maybe they might have moved that up to 1986, but that would have been like the only effect. And, you know, they had that ready to go, and, you know, everyone knew it was going to be a big success, and it did not disappoint. So at the end of the day, it would have been, you know, obviously they would have been disappointed, but it would not have sunk the company. It should have been more of an inconvenience than anything.
Yeah.
No, very well said.
All right. That's my rant for the day, ladies and gentlemen, or at least my rant for the next 10 minutes, maybe. Steve, how about you take a question?
All right. Well, I have the great Thomas Bain is asking a question saying, ignoring the historical component and basing it off of the in-ring action only, can WrestleMania 3 be considered the most overrated card of all time? And I'll tell you guys a funny little blooper here. When I read this question the first time I saw it, I think yesterday, I misread it. And I thought he was talking about WrestleMania 1, the first one. And I thought to myself, well, maybe that would be the most overrated because, I mean, there really wasn't a major standout match on that show that really blew you away. But to answer his question, you know, WrestleMania 3, I think that card, to me, it's perfect. I mean, it really has everything. You have, that match that John just referenced, Andre against Hogan, which was like a lifetime in the making. You had the closure before the blow-off of Steamboat against Savage, a remarkable match that still holds up today. And you have everybody else on the roster with a handful of small exceptions in meaningful roles doing what they do, and they put on a fun show. It had a little bit of everything. You had a bloody match with Billy Jack Haynes against Hercules. You had a comedy match with Bundy and the Midgets and Hillbilly Jim. I mean, there was something for everybody on this card, so I would definitely not call it overrated. And Brandon, if you want to put your comments on this one.
Absolutely. And shout out to Bane. Love that guy. But well, first of all, I think with this question, when I saw it and I thought about it, it was a little difficult for me to kind of figure it out at first, not because the question is worded perfectly fine, but I just feel like WrestleMania 3 is where it is in everybody's hierarchy because of the historical component of it. So it was a little difficult for me to separate, okay, the historical, the component of it with, you know, it being in the Silver Dome with all those fans and just this huge production that's put on from the actual match list. And I'm a little biased because WrestleMania 3 is probably my favorite WrestleMania ever. But just kind of to go with what Steve said, if you think about the card itself, pretty much every single match on there had a purpose behind it. It wasn't a bunch of, you know, just matches kind of thrown together. You kind of got that feel from WrestleMania 2 with some of the matches that were on there. They were kind of just thrown on there to fill the card. And while the quality of some of the WrestleMania 3 matches may have seemed like it was just filler, I mean, you had King Kong Bundy and Little People fighting Hillbilly Jim and Little People. We can't exactly give that 5 stars. But I just think as a whole, when you have Andre and Hogan, which as McAdam kind of alluded to with the previous question, that was the biggest match the WWF could put on really at any point for about a 3-4 year period. And the fact that they built it up so well, like it was, and it actually wasn't a terrible match itself. It would be hard for a card for me to say a card's overrated at that point with a match of that magnitude on it. And then all the matches that you had surrounding it, you had Steamboat and Savage, which was a great match. They had a big, you know, history going there. Junkyard Dog and Harley Race had a, you know, a history going there. Every single match for the most part had meaning. The opener with the, you know, the Can-Ams and Morocco and Orton was a good way to start it. I think that there are far, you know, worse WrestleManias that we could say may have been overrated in terms of the card itself. But for me personally, I don't think WrestleMania was really overrated. I think it was booked perfectly. I think because all the matches actually had some meaning and some purpose behind them, it would be hard for me to say that it was overrated.
I don't think it was overrated at all. And I'll tell you why. You know, I mean, the simple part of it is I don't know. I have not seen anyone in that, you know, it's been 37 years now, who was like, wow, you know, that WrestleMania was so good as far as in-ring action. You know, I just have not encountered someone like that. You know, yeah, Savage versus Steamboat was a really good match. I think people tend to go a little bit, you know, it actually might be underrated because people talk about how awful Andre versus Hogan was, and I don't think it was. I think, you know, if in a vacuum, if no one's if they're in a small arena or something, yeah, it's pretty terrible, but they weren't, you know, and you had everyone going nuts for it, and they delivered what they were supposed to deliver. So like I said, just only because, you know, I don't see anyone going, oh my God, you know, the Can-Ams against Morocco and Orton was a 4-star match. I thought, you know, I think it's properly rated in my own opinion.
Here's one that I haven't ever seen anyone put this twist on the WrestleMania 2 main event. So forgive me if I pronounce the name wrong. Is it Buron Rodriguez? Sorry, man, if I pronounce that wrong. But anyway, the question is, being that Piper was going to turn baby after WrestleMania 2 and a short hiatus, couldn't he have lost a Mania 2 main event cage match to Hogan without losing too much stock? He wouldn't have gotten pinned, so I don't see it hurting him too much. So I'll go ahead and answer that. And I'll just say, I think that is an interesting take on the main event. It seems like, you know, over the years, we're kind of fixated with, well, let's put, you know, we got to put a monster in there with Hogan. Let's put Brody in there with Hogan. Let's put Nikita Koloff in there with Hogan. I've never seen anyone. I think I've heard people maybe say Savage just because Savage and Hogan, you know, kind of had a bit of a run in 86. But I actually like this idea, and I think it would have worked perfectly because, you know, I feel like we never really, although WrestleMania 1, they headlined it, I feel like we never really got like a proper blow off to Hogan Piper. I know they, you know, they had some additional matches. I know they had the Wrestling Classic match, but it just kind of felt like we never really got like a one-on-one ending to those two. And, you know, we all know that Piper didn't like to do jobs clear and cut in the ring. So I think it would have been, I think it could have worked to have Piper and Hogan kind of run through the motions for another year and then build it up as the end all be all inside a cage. You know, you keep Orton out, you keep whoever out. And then, you know, you have Hogan finally win and beat Piper clean by climbing over the cage, and then Piper can still continue to go on his run in 86 to, you know, his babyface turn or whatever. So I think that's a really interesting play on that particular main event and kind of gets away from our traditional fantasy booking of who should have been there with Hogan at Mania 2.
Steve, your thoughts?
You know, I mean, knowing Vince the way we thought we knew him, I think with Piper, I mean, he had been in the main event at WrestleMania 1. He had been in the main event of the Wrestling Classic, which didn't really do huge business. I'm sure Vince's thinking was, well, we really can't go to that well again. We have to change it up a little bit. We can't do it three times in a row. And I think he completely misread the audience that there would be interest in Piper against T, which really turned into a disaster on every way possible. But I mean, what we've heard over the years is that Piper just didn't want to do jobs. He just didn't want to do business. And if you've seen some of those like A&E bios, the one on Piper, I think he basically said, like, you know, in retrospect, 30, 40 years later, he said to the effect of, well, you know, knowing what I know now, I should have done business with Hogan. Maybe I would have made more money. But in that era, he was very protective of his spot, and he didn't want to lose that spot. And I think for that reason, that match wasn't going to happen. But John, what's your take on it?
I mean, my take is your take, Steve. I have never met Roddy Piper personally. I have no inside information, but based on what we know about Piper, he wasn't doing the job. And you could have said to him, you know, Roddy, let's do the job. You're in the main event of WrestleMania. You're going to get a big paycheck. Come on. And no, man, I ain't doing it. Roddy, you're going to be turning babyface. When a guy's about to turn, they tend to do jobs. And you're going on hiatus, and Piper would just cut them off. I ain't doing it, man. I think it would have been that simple. He just wouldn't have done it, which is odd because I personally witnessed Roddy Piper doing a job to Hulk Hogan at the Boston Garden. I believe it was late 84. And it was that was just a one-off thing that only, you know, about 15, 16,000 people got to see. And even though to me it makes sense, you know, Roddy – You get the main event. You're going to be turning soon. It doesn't matter. Based on what I know about Roddy Piper, he just was not going to do it.
Just to expand, because he, Mr. Rodriguez, who asked the question, did kind of tail it off at the end with basically saying, was Roddy refusing to do jobs in cage matches as well? Because I mean, Hogan didn't have to pin him to win the cage match. So I think that was the kind of the caveat to the question is, we know Roddy doesn't want to do jobs. We know he's definitely not going to let Hogan give him the leg drop in the 1-2-3, especially not in WrestleMania if he wouldn't do it in Reno, Nevada somewhere. So with him not technically getting pinned, would he still have said no to letting Hogan go over the top of the cage to beat him? If the payday
was
there?
I didn't think of.
Right. I don't think he wanted to lose on a big nationwide show like that. I mean, I think John was in attendance when Bruno beat him in the cage. I think, John, you were there for that match, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. So, I mean, he knew when to do business, but I think he was so protective of these huge pay-per-view spots, knowing there'd be a gazillion eyes on the product. So.
That was really funny. The Chicago Bears just smoked the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl, and Piper comes out and starts posting on the cage posters of like Jim McMahon and Refrigerator Perry, you know, the big stars from the Chicago Bears, and the locals were not happy with Roddy Piper. That was hilarious. But you know what, Brandon, the more I think about it, you're right. Maybe it's not, you know, if it's not a leg drop 1-2-3 or even, you know, anything 1-2-3, if it's just Hogan climbing over the cage, maybe Piper would have done it. I'm still leaning towards no, but now it's not as strong a no as it once was. All right, we're going to talk more about Baron Rodriguez. Greg Sirota says, do you think that Jimmy Snuka being in the babyface corner at WrestleMania was a waste of his popularity? Wouldn't it have been better to have him wrestle that afternoon? And then Baron Rodriguez comes back and he says, the way the first WrestleMania was booked, I think it was perfect, as you also have him as an insurance policy in case Mr. T gets cold feet. Baron, it's been 37 years and I've never thought of that. You are absolutely right. Had Mr. T gotten cold feet, and he did. They had to talk him the day of the show. They had to talk him into getting into the ring. Paul Orndorff and Roddy Piper swore up and down that they were going to, you know, they wanted to do what was best for business, which is Mr. T winning the match, and they were not going to double cross him. But if they couldn't have talked him into it, I mean, they could have just got on the pay-per-view and said, hey, Mr. T chickened out. Jimmy Snuka is going to take his place, and it would have made sense. Brandon, your thoughts?
I agree there. I think that was probably maybe in someone's mind somewhere. I kind of got a twist to that because while, you know, obviously I understand T's whole purpose for being there in WrestleMania 1, it kind of has always puzzled me as to why they didn't have Snuka actually wrestle in the main event match. I mean, it would have made sense. He had history with Piper. He had history with Orton. He had history being, you know, one of Hogan's comrades. Why couldn't they have booked it so that maybe T was there? You could have T as your corner man, just as Orton was, and then have Snuka in the actual match itself. Now, I'm sure there was a reason behind that, and I know they really wanted to get, you know, T as involved as possible, but I personally think we could have done it that way. We probably could have gotten a better tag match, perhaps, if Snuka was actually in the ring in that spot. But yeah, at the same time, I do think that would have been a smart idea to make sure Snuka, hey, make sure you're ready to possibly go in the ring in case T can't go or just decides, you know, last minute, I guess if he did have cold feet that he didn't want to go. But yeah, I've always sat, and WrestleMania was one of the first tapes I was able to rent as a kid. And I've always just wondered why, you know, they couldn't have found a way to put Snuka in there and keep T out of there. as much as possible. I mean, even making it a six-man with everybody in there and keeping T out of the ring as much as possible. But yeah, I mean, if you need an insurance policy, that would have made some sense. you know, instead of just throwing a random guy in there with Hogan to battle these guys, Snuka would have obviously been the best choice. But me personally, I've always just felt like, hey, why not have Snuka just be Hogan's partner and then build T up as part of WrestleMania 1, as part of the main event, but simply as more of like an outside presence. And then, you know, you can give him a spot where maybe he gets a shot in on Orndorff or something like that to kind of get the crowd hype. But yeah, if you're going to have an insurance policy, if he can't go, then yeah, obviously Snuka would make the most sense there.
Steve, I'll tell you what, I want to see if you agree with me here, because you and I, you were around the same age, and we obviously were around the same age in 1985. The people I knew wanted to see Mr. T fight. They wanted to see him fight the wrestlers. And I had one person tell me that, you know, Mr. T was a legit tough guy and, you know, he's going to be against these phony baloney wrestlers, which, you know, I later learned that, you know, the last guy you'd ever want to mess with was Paul Orndorff. But, I mean, you know, in your area, I know everyone I talked, they wanted to see Mr. T fight.
Yeah, no, you make a good point there, and tying it with what Brandon just said, you know, where Brandon's point makes sense of having it be a 3-on-3 match. I think a big selling point was just if it is Hogan and T against Piper and Orndorff, that gives you the impression that T is going to have to carry his weight and do, you know, his part of the thing. If it was a 3-on-3, a 6-man match, he, you know, and I think the fans at home may have been thinking, well, is he going to get lost in the shuffle? Is he going to actually do the wrestling? But to answer the original question, I think it just talks about in great detail how far Snuka's stock in the company had fallen. I mean, I think that the Nancy Argentina thing had really played a major role in his stock plummeting within the company. I mean, yeah, he was big in 84, had the big feud with Piper, but you saw he didn't win the feud. Piper went over on him, and they're leaving him kind of in the background, like we're talking about, is kind of like almost like a plan B if T can't make it. And after WrestleMania, you know, you saw Snuka teamed up with Steamboat on a few shows. And I know we're going to have potentially a future show with Brad Belusian where he talks about Snuka on a plane ride, which we'll have to get into in the future, a few months after WrestleMania. But his status with the company is on at least a little bit shaky ground as of WrestleMania, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Snuka, clearly his popularity has taken a hit, and I have publicly stated that, you know, the whole Jimmy Snuka thing may not have been an accident, that they might have been looking to take a little bit of the air out of Jimmy Snuka. Steve, I believe it's your turn to ask a question.
All right. The great Les Tackett asks, in 1985, could the NWA and AWA co-promoted a card that would be as popular as WrestleMania 1? If so, what would be the feature matches? And I'll just give you a quick answer. I mean, I'm sure they could have put together a great, great show if they really unified and put together, you know, all these, you know, big names, you know, Flair, Dusty, the Von Erichs, the Freebirds, blah, blah, blah. But I think that what set WrestleMania aside from, say, anything that these groups could do is that Hogan had crossed over into the mainstream as this kind of a, you know, superhero popular character. And Mr. T was like maybe the only guy comparable to a Hulk Hogan. You know, both of them had action figures. Both of them were on Saturday morning TV, whether in a cartoon or on wrestling. And that was just really relatable, not only to kids, but to people of all ages. And I mean, the NWA guys had Flair and Dusty, who were great. But I think for the average TV viewer that's watching those guys, I think they're just going to say, oh, those are pro wrestlers. Meanwhile, they're looking at Hogan and T and they're saying, my God, these are TV stars or big stars. And I think that was what kind of separated WWF from the other promotions at this point. And John or Brandon, you want to chime in on this one?
Brandon, you're the guest, so I'd like you to go first.
Yeah, I'm just going to kind of go ahead and write off, you know, a bit of what Steve said. I think in terms of the wrestling purists at the time, I think absolutely in terms of match quality, a joint card with those two promotions could have worked well. I mean, I know they tried it with, you know, some of the Pro Wrestling USA stuff. But I think the main trump card that the WWF had there, you know, outside of being, you know, in that large Northeast market, was the whole Rock and wrestling thing. Like WrestleMania 1 was built up, you know, kind of on the back of this whole MTV thing, Cyndi Lauper. WrestleMania 1 had the star power. So unless, you know, AWA was going to go out of their way to, you know, get Sylvester Stallone and Madonna and all these, you know, additional people to try to tack on to the event some type of way, I just don't see how it could have been anywhere near as popular when you have, you know, somebody like Mr. T that's in the main event. You know, you got Muhammad Ali as a guest ref, you know, Liberace's there, Cyndi Lauper. Like, I just don't see there being any way just as is that NWA and AWA could have done an event that would have garnered that much type of attention. And that's obviously by design, because Vince McMahon knew what he was doing, trying to, you know, expand nationally by joining up with MTV and that sort of thing.
Yeah, my answer is going to be pretty negative. First of all, the NWA obviously could put together something that would sell out a big arena and be able to be broadcast on closed circuit locally in the Carolinas, Virginia, maybe a little bit beyond that. But there's no way they could have done something nationally in 1985. And if they had hooked up with the AWA, to be honest, by 1985, the AWA just wasn't really bringing enough to the table. I mean, they had Sergeant Slaughter. They had, you know, Rick Martel, who was a great wrestler, but just, you know, you can't compare his star power to Ric Flair, let alone Hulk Hogan. So I just don't see the path here. Okay, let's go to Brandon Hefner. If there was no Mr. T, who could have possibly filled that spot with Hogan? Brandon, any ideas?
I'm going to go ahead and respond with a response, just assuming that, you know, the guys I name don't hate wrestling and maybe there's no real budget on getting them. But I think if maybe you want to throw someone in there that has, you know, Mr. T-type star power, that has perhaps the physique to make it seem realistic in 1985. So, I mean, I'm not going to throw Chevy Chase in there with Hulk Hogan versus Piper and Orndorff, but what about Sylvester Stallone? Perhaps maybe even Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, both of those guys obviously had, you know, some type of stature at the time. They were big, huge names in Hollywood. And I mean, honestly, we know Stallone probably can't box to the level that he did in the Rocky movies, but I would think that there might have been the same type of kind of like allure, like, you know, is Arnold Mr. Olympia? Can this guy, you know, can he pick up Piper and throw him around? You know, Stallone, can he hold his own in there? So I think if you're going to stick with, you know, the celebrity thing to try to help garner, obviously, attention, I don't see why you couldn't have thrown either one of those guys in there whose name was probably even bigger than Mr. T from a global perspective at that point.
Steve, your thoughts?
Well, Brandon makes a very good point there. I mean, Schwarzenegger had the size to do it, and he probably had the ego to do it. I think Stallone was actually a little too diminutive and small. I think definitely Stallone understood his shortcomings and wouldn't have put himself in that situation to look so small against these monsters. You know, and it's so funny how TV is, because, you know, for somebody who didn't watch wrestling and saw Mr. T on the A-Team every week, you thought Mr. T was huge because he's next to George Papard, he's next to regular actors, and he looked huge. But when you watch the WrestleMania 1 main event, I mean, Piper seems to be twice his size, and Piper, you know, amongst wrestling fans is never thought of as a big guy. But getting back to the original question, maybe Schwarzenegger could have done it. I mean, he would have had the size. I don't think he would have been able to be that mobile. I mean, I thought Stallone too a little bit, but you still got to go back to wrestling. I mean, you know, if Sergeant Slaughter hadn't already had that deal with the AWA or with Hasbro or whatever, even just pulling him off the shelf, who had been gone maybe a few months, he might have been a good, like, you know, one-time only replacement. But anyhow, John, any of your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, your picks are my picks, Brandon and Steve. I mean, I have always suspected that Stallone was offered the role first. I mean, obviously, he and Hogan from the Rocky III movie would have made a lot of sense. I like I said, that's always been my theory, that Stallone was offered and said no. Schwarzenegger would have gotten what they were doing because he was a bodybuilder before he got into acting. And by the way, I recommend Pumping Iron is on YouTube. You can watch it for free, and it's a great movie, especially if you're a wrestling fan, because you will see the parallels between professional bodybuilding and pro wrestling. They're very similar in a lot of ways. But you know what? Being asked to pick between his next big movie and doing a WrestleMania, I can't see getting Schwarzenegger. So my third pick, NBA is in season, so you're not going to get Magic Jordan or Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan. But Lawrence Taylor would have been my third pick. And, you know, the NFL is in its offseason. I mean, obviously, whoever was Bill Parcells wouldn't have been very happy with it. But and we know, you know, we learned later that Lawrence Taylor was willing to do wrestling. So and he was a really big star. He's one of the biggest stars in the NFL. So that would have been my third choice. And I think if you had thrown enough money at Lawrence Taylor, he would have done it.
Yeah, and I will say to that point, and I was thinking about, you know, with all these questions, I was also thinking about the WrestleMania that he did against Bam Bam Bigelow. LT, to me, LT, even though, like you say, he was one of the all-time great NFL players, and I was a Giants fan back then, to me, he was too regional. I mean, with Mr. T, he was somebody that appealed to everybody because the A-team was on in every, you know, every market. Everybody knew the A-team, and they'd seen Rocky III. But, you know, LT, unless you're a Giants fan or in the East Coast, I mean, yeah, it's one thing to watch, Luke Kippelman is watching from San Francisco and being impressed with Lawrence Taylor. But, I mean, is that going to make, you know, Luke Kippelman or Brandon in Las Vegas want to buy a ticket? I don't think so.
Yeah, see, I disagree with you that he was a regional star. He was a national star. You had to be an NFL fan to know who he was. But then again, you could get on TV, the WWF, and introduce the wrestling fan who may not have known who Lawrence Taylor was to that wrestling fan. And by the way, one thing, I know that was Lawrence Taylor is a big step down for Mr. T. I totally get that.
Sure.
But I actually want to stop and give Mr. T a lot of credit because he was in phenomenal shape coming into that WrestleMania match. And, you know, no, he's not Ric Flair or Tatsumi Fujinami, but he did what he needed to do. It was obvious that he worked on doing the spots that he did, and he did them well. They were easy, uncomplicated spots. If you give him anything else, you're a dumbbell. But he did, you know, he did his part. Now I give him credit.
You're right.
I am unqualified to host a podcast. I have no idea whose turn it is.
I think I'm up, actually.
Okay, so, Steve.
So Ryan Botwinick asks, if Slaughter hadn't joined the Iraqi army and won the title, who would you have Warrior face and have Hogan face at WrestleMania 7? Or would it have been Hogan Warrior 2? And my answer to this is, and this kind of ties in with something we've already talked about on the show, and I, as an observer reader, I remember this was in you know, people were buzzing about this back at the time of WrestleMania 7. There was some talk that they were going to go back to the well of Hogan against Piper because it was an unresolved issue, like Brandon had said earlier. They never really had closure with that. And I think that would have popped a huge crowd if they had worked it properly. And they definitely could have put, you know, being that they're both great talkers and they had that shared history together and they could have showed old footage and whatever to make it interesting. And we even saw later, you know, years later in WCW, there was still interest in that match. I mean, there were two old fossils by that time, but it was still a popular big box office attraction in 96 when they did it. So that would have been my match. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it, and I feel like I might have seen or could have just been Mandela effect that they were trying to pitch Hogan Warrior 2 for WrestleMania 7. I could be wrong on that, but that would be my choice. The rematch, you obviously you have, you know, you're going to keep the strap on the Warrior for about a year anyway. Hogan is, you know, not necessarily knocked down the card because he was still, you know, doing things with Earthquake at the top of the card in 90. But I think you get to 91, you run it back, especially since you plan to give Hogan the belt back at WrestleMania 7 anyway. Hogan gets his revenge. I don't know how you end up playing, you know, the retirement match between Warrior and Savage, which was actually ended up being a really good match. But I think you do Hogan Warrior 2. If maybe, I don't know, 91, you're able to maybe get Flair in there to do Hogan Flair at WrestleMania 7. But if we're going to go based off the pieces that are already in place, I think Warrior Hogan Part 2, which that was quietly a pretty decent match from those two at WrestleMania 6. So I don't think anyone, you know, the casual fan or, you know, a kid like me would have scoffed at the fact that they were going to run it again. I definitely think you could see Part 2. Warrior takes the leg drop and actually gets pinned. He doesn't kick out of it this time. You know, Hulk gets his belt back. And then, you know, you can do whatever you want to do with Warrior after that at that point. If he's, you know, going to be fired for a while or whatever you want to do with him, losing to Hogan in the main event of WrestleMania isn't going to exactly knock you all the way down to, you know, dark matches at the beginning of Superstars. So I think that would probably have been the best bet. I think that probably would have helped ticket sales a little more, I think, having those two headline again versus the Hogan Slaughter thing. So that would be my pick. Just run it back with those two again and let Hogan get his win back.
My take, and I want to make it clear that, you know, I am speculating here, but back in 1991, I thought for sure that Hogan Warrior rematch was going to be the main event at WrestleMania 7 WrestleMania 7. And then they brought spring 1990, they brought Sergeant Slaughter back as a heel. And then a real life occurrence happened. The country of Iraq invaded Kuwait. And January 15th, 1991, first time since I was cognitive, we were at war. We went to war with another country. And I believe those real life events steered Vince McMahon into incorporating that real life thing into a wrestling angle. And that's what put Sergeant Slaughter in the main event at WrestleMania 7. You know, like I said, it is pure speculation on my part, but I believe had that not happened, that we would have seen Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior Part 2 Electric Boogaloo. You have to be old to get that one, kids.
Well, here's kind of just a tail off question from that really quick, because I was 6.5, 7 years old when this took place. How did you guys receive Slaughter being champion and headlining WrestleMania at that point anyway? Is it something that everybody was hype about, or was it one of those things where it was just like, all right, this guy's obviously the transitional guy to get the belt back on the Hogan? Did anybody really take Slaughter's reign? I mean, seriously, it was only a couple months.
Yeah, he won it at a Royal Rumble and lost it at WrestleMania. Steve, what do you think?
It just seemed like a desperate move. I remember it was Teresa DeMarie from The Observer called me, I think, and I hadn't gotten the Royal Rumble, but I think she called me and said, Slaughter won the title. And I was just, you know, shocked. And, you know, and by that time, you know, the general public really didn't care about WWF. It was really a downtime for WWF. And even the wrestling fans, I think, were really like ho-hum about this WrestleMania. It was kind of like going through the motions, I felt.
I mean, my own take on it was, I mean, Sergeant Slaughter at the time, Sergeant Slaughter just coming back to the WWF seemed like an impossibility. I mean, it was incredible when I first heard that they were bringing him back. I couldn't believe it. And not only were they bringing him back, they were bringing him back and giving him a big push. And when I say that, you know, I'm still saying I don't think he would have gotten the championship had it not been for those real world events. But I mean, he was going to get a big push. They were putting a lot of TV time into him. And I mean, if someone had told me January 1990 that a year later Sergeant Slaughter was going to be WWF champion, I mean, I would have written that off as an absolute impossibility. The same way, you know, Bob Backlund in 1994. I mean, just, you know, that wasn't going to happen. And, you know, so that was kind of my take on Sergeant Slaughter returning, that he felt like this really old guy that had been washed up and had been forgotten about in the wrestling business. And now they're putting the WWF championship on him. And, you know, when the rumor coming into the Royal Rumble in 91 was that, you know, Slaughter was going to be the transitional champion, and they were going, you know, Hulk Hogan was going to be the guy who saved the day again from the Iraqi sympathizer who is now WWF champion. But the whole thing felt like a very contrived storyline. I was not crazy about it. Anyway, who's Brendan? I think it's your turn to pick a question.
Yeah, it is my turn. So we're going to go with my guy, Sonny Martinez, who says Hogan versus Austin, Hogan versus Flair, Sting versus Undertaker, Cena versus Austin. What's the best WrestleMania match to never happen? Now, if we're answering this question just strictly based on names and star power and there's nothing restricting us from making it happen, then obviously my choice is Hogan versus Flair. But I'd like to get more specific with my choice, and I would want it to be, I don't know where you if you can get Flair maybe in 86 and we can build that up and maybe do those two at WrestleMania 2, Hogan and Flair. Obviously, I don't know if you can ever swap out Hogan and Andre at WrestleMania 3, but it would need to be somewhere in one of the earlier WrestleManias. And I say that before everyone, you know, had sort of started to kind of get tired of the Hogan shtick. If we could do it somewhere 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 in 1989, I think that would have been great. I know that the opportunity did kind of present itself by, you know, 92 when WrestleMania 8 was around. But by then, I feel like it would have been too late. You could tell Hogan was starting to get, you know, backlash from people, from crowds, you know, that whole Royal Rumble thing. And I think that would have been a scary situation to have the heel guy Flair get cheered over Hogan at WrestleMania, kind of how it felt like with Sid at WrestleMania 8, where it was just kind of like, I mean, does the crowd actually want Hogan to beat Sid? So I think if you can get those two in one of the earlier WrestleManias, Hogan versus Flair, I would say that would probably be one of the better matches that didn't happen, that could have. And this is strictly from a star power perspective, not necessarily from a match quality perspective.
Steve, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think, you know, the one that stands out to me would have been Randy Savage against Lex Luger with, you know, Elizabeth restraining order on a pole match, something like that. But also, and, you know, the huge Randy Savage of like 1999, the one with Gorgeous George by his side, him against Stone Cold or him against Kurt Angle would have been, you know, off the charts in so many ways. I know Randy has slowed down, but he looked so great. You know, it was his final big, big run. You know, there was those rumors why Vince didn't want to have him back. But I think that would have been box office, and that would have been a match we'd still be talking about today.
I can see that. You know, it took me a long time to come up with a number two. People forget what a big deal Lex Luger was in the late 80s and early 90s. If the WWF had ever been able to finally get their hands on a young Lex Luger and built up a WrestleMania of Hulk Hogan, the babyface, against Lex Luger, the heel, in like 89 or 90, I think that would have been huge. But to me, the number one by a pretty large margin would have been 2002 with Hulk Hogan against Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, you know, this era versus the last era. And, you know, what they wound up doing was Rock versus Hogan and then Austin against Hall. And from what I heard at the time, Austin just did not want to do business with Hulk Hogan for whatever reason. But if Austin had been more cooperative, I think that would have been, you know, the ultimate WrestleMania match of, you know, the guy from the 80s against the guy from the 90s.
Mm.
You know, and then there's always that big debate, you know, who was the biggest star in WWF history? Was it Hogan? Was it Austin? And both guys have a legitimate argument. So right there, to me, that would have been the dream WrestleMania match.
I don't think as good as it sounds on paper, I don't think it would have eclipsed what we did see with Hogan against Rock, because that was epic. It really was.
I hate that match. I hate that match. I hate the fact that those
Brandon jump in and save me on this. Brandon, save me on this one.
I hate it's not even that. It's a personal me thing. I hate the fact that the people in Toronto got behind Hulk Hogan the way they did. I remember just being so pissed watching that. I usually don't get that irrational watching wrestling. But I'm like, what are you people doing? This guy sucks.
Brandon, what do you think?
I just, so everyone knows, I hated Hulk Hogan at that time. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was the consummate Hulkamaniac in the 80s and early 90s. So by the 2000s, I didn't want to see Hogan anymore either. I personally liked the Hogan Rock match. Maybe you should just try watching it on mute so you don't hear the crowd. But I thought the match was, I thought it was a good match. I enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of akin to what you were saying as far as, you know, Hogan and Austin being, you know, the two biggest stars. I mean, Rock had gotten to a point where he was kind of right there behind Austin. I mean, even to this day, in a lot of the circles I'm in, people talk about The Rock before they talk about Stone Cold sometimes. So I think there was an element of what you were saying that would have been there with Hogan and Austin. I think it was still there and present with The Rock and Hogan as well. But yeah, personally, I wouldn't put that match in my top five all time, but I thought the match was pretty good. And by that point, yes, I absolutely hated Hulk Hogan and didn't want to see him anywhere near my TV either.
I mean, it was just, you know, to me, the stuff that Hulk Hogan did in WCW, you know, I thought, I understand that you have to protect yourself in wrestling and you have to sometimes look out for your own interests, but he just went so overboard. I think he had a lot to do with that company going under. And then for him to turn around and get rewarded with a match against The Rock at WrestleMania, which, you know, that was the main event. I don't care what the billing was. And it bothered me then, and it bothers me to this day. I remember Bill Simmons writing a column saying, you know, what is Dave Meltzer talking about? This is a 5-star match. I'm like, man, this is a negative 3-star match. Get out of here with that. So you guys hit my third rail today.
I think we hit your last nerve, maybe. I don't know.
You know, this hour always goes by so quickly. I'll tell you what, I want to get one more question in. I want to get Brandon question in. Scotty Grace, and we've talked about this on the show before, but I've actually come around on this. Why do you think Hulk Hogan never made a strong push to sign Nikita Koloff? I always thought he would have been a strong opponent for Hogan at WrestleMania 2 instead of King Kong Bundy. I mean, in 1986, I thought, you know, why aren't they doing everything they can to get Nikita Koloff and with Ivan as, you know, the former WWF champion in his corner? And I feel a little bit differently about it today. Brandon, I know one of the times you were on the show, we actually talked about this.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it wouldn't have been a problem. People seem to have a real issue with Bundy being in that main event. And personally, I think it served its purpose just fine. But I think with the Nikita situation, you know, Vince was really big on, you know, bringing in, you know, people that he created basically. And if you bring Nikita over from, you know, Crockett at that time, he's a Crockett guy. It's not a Russian guy that he created. So I feel like, if Vince does bring him over, are we going to get, if he finds a way to get him over, are we going to get the Russian Nightmare Nikita, or is he going to throw him in some weird outfit and make him Norwegian? So I think if he keeps Nikita as is, I think it could work if we have to obviously have a monster type guy in there. But one of the things that I did point out when we touched on this, you know, some years back, was I just feel like if we're going monster heel and we need some big guy, I feel like you need a guy that's either, you know, Bundy's size in terms of body mass, or you need somebody Andre's size in terms of height. And I know we've used Brody as an example before. I'm not sure exactly how tall Brody was, but I think standing up against Hogan, I think would have made Nikita look small, to be honest with you. Obviously, working in the NWA, Nikita doing stuff against the Rock and Roll Express, who, I mean, I look big next to them, you know, or even the Horsemen. But when Nikita would go up against like the Road Warriors and stuff, I mean, he still, you know, stood his ground, but he didn't necessarily give off monster vibes to me when he would be standing next to Hogan. So I don't know if maybe that was Vince's thought process. Like maybe Nikita isn't, you know, because Hogan's a pretty tall guy in his own right. I think he wouldn't have looked as monstrous standing next to Hogan in that cage as a lot of us probably think in our heads. And then again, just on the top of the, you know, on top of that, the fact that Nikita wasn't a homegrown product. Now, I do like the fact that, yes, we can piggyback the Ivan Koloff situation. Ivan's back and he's bringing his nephew with him. But again, that wouldn't have been something that Vince could have been able to say, I'm the brainchild of this. This is my creation. I'm going to throw this guy in there with Hogan. And again, that's on top of the fact that I just don't think Nikita's stature standing next to Hogan would have measured up the way that a lot of us think it would have.
I mean, you're right. Vince, even back then, had to put his own fingerprints on every guy. Ricky Steamboat was no longer just Ricky Steamboat. He was the Dragon. Dick Slater is now the Rebel, etc. So, Steve, your thoughts?
Yeah, Brandon made some really good points there. And I think going back to WrestleMania 1, you know, just the visual of King Kong Bundy, like, you know, back when we were the closed circuit watching this, I mean, his back just covered the entire screen at the theater. I mean, he was just so huge. And I think they were planting the seeds then, just a little foreshadowing that, you know, this guy could make a great, great opponent for Hogan someday. So I think that's why he went with Bundy. And, you know, the WWF was bringing all these great stars from other promotions. And you got to remember, too, Nikita was really, really green. I mean, Bundy didn't have a ton of experience, but he'd been a job guy in WWF in 80, 81. He had had enough experience. I don't think on his second biggest show of the year that Vince would have put a very green guy in the main event like Nikita, even with all the bells and whistles of having Ivan in his corner. But, that's all I have to say on that one.
You know, it's been over for, well, let me start with this. My problem with King Kong Bundy is that I had already seen Hulk Hogan beat him in the Boston Garden. Like, I think it was November 1985. So mm-hmm. I had just seen that match. If they had protected Bundy or, you know, it felt like they didn't even know they were going to do Hogan versus Bundy until like a month or two before the match. That was, to me, the problem wasn't Bundy. The problem was the way that they built him up or that they failed to build him up. But, you know, for almost 40 years, I've been like, you know, Vince needed to do whatever he needed to do to get Nikita Koloff for Hogan's opponent at WrestleMania. You know, we were very much a USA, Reagan era culture. And recently something came into my head like, you know, yeah, it would be a perfect main event, especially coming off Rocky IV. And I'm like, wait a minute. It would have been, the whole thing would have been too similar to Rocky IV. It's like, you know, you can't just replicate that whole movie. It would have been too similar, and I think that would have turned people off. So after almost 40 years, I have kind of changed my mind on that it would have been, you know, I think the similarity to that blockbuster movie would have turned a lot of people off. Again, the hour always goes by so quickly. Brandon, thank you for coming on. It was great talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, guys. It's always a good time.
Steve, thank you for taking the time. As always, I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And I'm so glad you booked Brandon during this sweeps period. We got to have big ratings because of Brandon.
There you go. It's sweeps month here at the Stricter Wrestling office. And I want to thank Lou Kippelman for all the great work he does producing this show and being very generous with his time. I want to thank Brian Lass for giving me this forum. Of course, I want to thank all of you for listening. It means a lot to me when someone gets on Facebook and says, you know what, I look forward to this every Friday. I want to thank the Tennessee Volunteers basketball team for a great season. And of course, thank all of you for listening. This has been a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network.
This concludes our podcast day.